discuss the top international, national, and state political stories of the week in this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have two guests with us from different perspectives, and we will talk about the religious freedom bills in Indiana and Arkansas, efforts to end Wisconsin's prevailing wage law, a final push in the race for state Supreme Court justice. And we'll start with this deal that was announced yesterday on a deal that would limit Iran's nuclear capabilities. And we will welcome any issues you would like to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Joy.
And Tony Palmieri is with us, a communications professor at UW Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Owen.
Good morning.
Thanks to both of you for being with us. Well, let's start with this deal that was announced yesterday, a preliminary deal. It's designed to contain Iran's nuclear program. It would restrict Iran's ability to enrich uranium and develop nuclear weapons, and in return, it would lift the sanctions on Iran. Lots of reaction to this deal. Let's just get your general reaction, Owen. Good deal or no deal?
Well, so far we don't have a deal. We have a deal to have a framework to have a deal later on. So I mean, without knowing a lot of details and actual commitments, it's hard to say. But I think the whole premise here is very, very flawed in that we are seeking, as America and with our partners in Germany and France and such, to limit Iran's ability to develop nuclear capability for a period of time, after which they can develop more. In return for that, we're willing to lift sanctions to give them plenty of money to fuel that development. The great flaw with this is that Iran is not a trustworthy state. We got to this point because they covertly developed their nuclear capability. They had secret centrifuges. They had secret efforts to develop nuclear weapons and nuclear capabilities. They're a vocal state sponsor of terror around the world, and they're not a trustworthy regime. So any agreement that doesn't have firm teeth in it to make sure that Iran is sticking by its agreements, which have to be very, very firm because we know they lie, is not worth the paper it's written on.
Yeah, it's true that this is a preliminary agreement that will allow all sides, the U.S., Iran, five other world powers, to continue working toward a final deal by a June 30th deadline. But, Tony, your thoughts on the preliminary agreement?
I thought that in spite of all the obstacles that the Congress has put up, that President Obama and John Kerry, it's amazing that they've gotten this far with the negotiations. Realistically, what are the options here? The United States can put on greater sanctions, but we know that with the sanctions regime in place, that has not stopped any nuclear program. We could use the John Bolton solution, which is to bomb the installations, resulting in who knows how many thousands of deaths and probably accelerating a race toward nuclear weapons at that point. A negotiated settlement, which is not just between the United States and Iran, it's between Iran and six nations, is really the only realistic option here. And the idea that members of the U.S. Congress have been trying to wreck the negotiations, I find very unfortunate. And even presidential candidates like Scott Walker have already announced that they would overturn any agreement if they were to get elected. So in spite of all those political barriers that Obama and Kerry have gotten this far, I believe is nothing short of amazing. If there is a real agreement, obviously, and I think Owen and I would agree on this, it has to have the strongest possible verification procedures in place if there is an agreement.
Senator Tammy Baldwin said in Milwaukee yesterday that she is expecting more detailed briefings on the announcement. But she says the news is encouraging. Her quote, you know, it was just a few months ago where most administration officials were saying that there was less than a 50-50 chance that this would come to fruition. I am hopeful. I have to say that this is good news. Senator Ron Johnson, however, said that if President Obama truly believes the framework will prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, he ought to prove that to Congress and the American people. Johnson says he will introduce a bill requiring Senate ratification of a final deal later this year. So should there be a, I don't know, a Senate ratification of this, Owen?
I believe it's not a radical value, and it's in our Constitution that the Senate ratifies agreements with foreign countries. I think that's something we've done for a long time, and in a republic, in a democratically elected government, that's how we work. The Senate is represents the will of the people as much as the president does, and is a co-equal branch of government and has every obligation and right to ratify that agreement. So absolutely, and I think it's very disconcerting, I think, that when you have President Obama and Secretary of State Kerry looking for ratification, if you will, and validation from international bodies before they're even willing to give the details to the people of the United States, who they're duly elected members of Congress.
What do you think, Tony?
The problem is that this Congress is reflexively anti-Obama on every single issue, whether it's domestic or foreign, so that Senator Johnson knows that there's no level of proof that President Obama could present that this Republican Congress would accept. So it would be really a sham. And I think almost an insult to the United States Senate to go in that direction. You know, I would return to what are the realistic alternatives here. I think everybody would agree that the sanctions regime, as has been in place, has not worked. I think only the extreme fringe, the John Boltons, the Benjamin Netanyahu, want to see the bombing option. So you're left realistically with international negotiation between Iran, six nuclear nations, and setting in place this process that will have verifiable inspections, realistic inspections. I'm just not hearing any other realistic option to what or alternative to what Obama and Kerry are trying to do here.
Well, first, I mean, the fact that the Senate does not agree with Obama is not a problem. That's how government works in a democracy. We have opposing views, and we have a structure set up where those views can be vetted and voiced and voted upon. So what you're suggesting is the fact that Congress doesn't agree with the president, so we should give the president just arbitrary dictatorial rights to do agreements with foreign nations. I don't think that's what our founders intended. But as far as alternatives to this deal, sanctions are working in conjunction with the fact that the price of oil has crashed. Iran is it's crippling their economy. That is what has brought them to the table to even talk to us right now. So it is working. It is starving out their ability to create a nuclear program. And we can hope, we should be hoping, destabilizing that regime where hopefully more people more inclined to liberty and friendly towards the rest, towards the West, would come forth and create their own government. So there are alternatives to creating a deal. So the goal should not be a deal. A goal should be what has been one of the bulwarks of American foreign policy for decades now, and that is that Iran, a terrorist-supporting regime, should not get nuclear capability.
You mentioned, Tony, that Governor Walker has weighed in on this. He said on Charlie Sykes' show yesterday, if I ultimately choose to run and if I'm honored to be elected by the people of this country, I will pull back on that agreement on January 20th, 2017, because the last thing, not just for the region but for this world, that we need is a nuclear-armed Iran. It leaves not only problems for Israel because they want to annihilate Israel, it leaves the problems in the sense that the Saudis, the Jordanians, and others are going to want to have access to their own nuclear weapons. So your reaction to Governor Walker saying if elected president, he would pull back on this deal for those reasons.
You know, what's interesting, Joy, is that maybe it was 6 months ago when Scott Walker and other Republican candidates traveled to Las Vegas to meet with Sheldon Adelson, the billionaire financier, and it turns out that the position they're taking on the Iran negotiations exactly mirrors Sheldon Adelson's position, and that's why some critics called it the Sheldon Adelson primary, that you've got these Republican candidates auditioning to get the support of this individual. I think it's so tragic that this happens in our campaigns in America, that here you've got a presidential candidate who has not even really seen an agreement, who's not even calling himself a candidate, but is already announcing that he will overturn it if he is elected, with the subtext of it being that this is a position he needs to take to ensure a certain funding level in a presidential primary. I think this is a classic example of what's really, the rot, if you will, in our current system of government. And it's really just unfortunate that Walker and other Republican candidates would take this position at that time, before they've even seen an agreement.
Owen?
Well, it's striking that Walker appears to be running for president. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. You have a politician who's running for office, and he's taking stances on controversial issues that are happening right now in order to both get himself in the news and also to raise funds and to stake out a position in the campaign. This is politics. Again, this is Democratic action in progress. It's not new. It's not something that's unheard of. You had, President Obama, when he was running for election, talking about what he was going to do to pull out of Iraq, but support Afghanistan, whether he supported the surge back then or not. And, I mean, all those things that happened, this happens every single election cycle with every single candidate. Walker's just following the course.
Coming up as we continue our examination of the top stories in the news this week, we'll talk about the uproar over the religious freedom bills, both in Indiana and Arkansas. Both governors have now signed amended bills into law. We'll talk about the latest on that and much more. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Tony Palmieri and Owen Robinson. If you would like to join in, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Each week at this time, we talk with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in politics. Today, we are talking with Owen Robinson, a columnist with the West Bend Daily News, a blogger at bootsandsabers.com, and Tony Palmieri, a communications professor at UW Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. We'll talk about the religious freedom bills next. If you have an issue you'd like to introduce, or if you'd like to talk about any of the issues we are discussing, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So the governors of Indiana and Arkansas yesterday signed revised versions of their state's religious freedom bills. The moves came after an uproar, blowback from businesses and many other people who said the laws were anti-gay and discriminatory. Are the revised bills good enough, Tony Palmieri?
It looks like in Arkansas and in Indiana, the attempt is to try and make the bills more along the lines of the 1993 Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is relatively non-controversial. So the LGBT movement and many liberals, progressives, what have you, would say, yeah, that's, I think, acceptable. But I don't think it would be acceptable to the supporters of these bills in Indiana and Arkansas, because it seemed to me and many others that the reason why they wanted these bills was to be able to discriminate. So it will be interesting to see what kind of response Mike Pence in Indiana and Governor Hutchinson in Arkansas get from the supporters of these bills in their states, because it sounded to me and many others like the attempt was to give so-called Christians in those states a license to discriminate. So if they sign these amended versions, they will not have, apparently, the power to do that.
Mm-hmm. Owen?
Well, it was never designed to give them a license to discriminate. That's pretty outrageous. These are very narrowly defined laws to begin with that give the legal framework for whether a government can override somebody's religious liberty or not. So, I mean, if you read the actual text of the Indiana law, for instance, it says a government entity may substantially burden a person's exercise of religion only if the government entity demonstrates that application of the burden to that person is in furtherance of a compelling government interest and the least restrictive means of furthering that compelling government interest. Meaning, it's not a license to discriminate. It's saying if somebody has a religious conviction, that the government has to have a darn good reason that furthers a state interest in order to override that person's rights. This is the kind of friction we get when different rights collide. So you have people's rights to not be discriminated against, along with people's religious convictions. And this is allowing a legal framework to have this in place. And in 20 years of the federal law and the dozens of other states who already have laws similar to this on the books, and even Wisconsin, where we don't have a law like this, but we actually have a constitutional interpretation unanimous from our Supreme Court signed off on by Abrahamson and Bradley, saying the exact same thing, that the government has to have a compelling state interest to override someone's religious rights.
These current religious freedom laws at the state level are coming up in the context of same-sex marriage being legalized in those states. And there's been an active attempt, I'll use the phrase again, to provide a license to discriminate against gay and lesbian people who now have those expanded rights. And much to their credit, businesses in Indiana and Arkansas and other states have called out the governors on this. They do not appreciate this kind of discrimination, and they're speaking out against it. Good for them. And you know, in fact, many people in the LGBT community have been, you know, rightfully upset about what's going on in Indiana. But you know, you could frame it in a more positive way. This goes to show you how far we've moved in this country. I mean, if states had passed these anti-gay types of measures even 10 years ago, the uproar would not have been as great as it is right now. So in that sense, people who support gay, lesbian rights should be, you know, kind of pleased by what's happened in the last few weeks.
I think the other thing you see here, though, is that the gay lobby has really seized on this as an issue pertaining to them. When these laws have been passed for so long and been in place for so long to protect the religious rights mainly of minorities, of Native American religious rights and the Amish and people like that, that's where these laws have been used. And again, in over 20 years of jurisprudence, there's not been a single case where somebody has been allowed to discriminate against the LGBT community with the defense of one of these laws. So it's really been a political seizure of these laws by the gay lobby. And it's really, frankly, it's very disturbing because it has these very fascist tendencies where you have this group that says, we are in America today, we are not even going to tolerate people who have a dissenting view. And if you don't agree with us, you're not even allowed to be in business. You're not even allowed to participate in commerce if you don't agree with what we agree with. And that's a very scary stance for a group with so much political power to take in this country.
Well, the what about Owen, the governor of Indiana, signing this this bill with anti-gay marriage politicians and lobbyists standing around, and then the pizza shop guy says, "Hey, I'm not gonna cater any same-sex marriages." I mean, wasn't there a legitimate fear that this law was going on the books to discriminate against gays and lesbians?
I don't think, as the law was written, that the clarification was necessary, and I don't think it hurts. I think it does how it would have been interpreted and used in the legal sense anyway. I think it was a political move to have a quote-unquote clarification in order to try to dispel the uproar. And really, like, go take that pizza case as a great example. So you take that. Who is actually harmed there? You have a person who has a religious conviction who doesn't want to cater a wedding. So what? How many pizza places are there in this country where they could get their catering and be fine and let this man go about his business? And I disagree with him. I think he should cater it. I think it's stupid for him to turn away that business. But that's not for me to decide. It's his conscience and his business, and he should have the right to be able to make that choice.
I mean, that goes back to the Jim Crow South. I mean, we could have all turned a blind eye.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Come on.
How is it ridiculous? There were people.
You're talking about that because you're
people,
talking about action.
Owen, you know as well as I do that there were people throughout the Jim Crow South who cited religious justification for not serving African Americans, for not tolerating interracial couples in their shop. So we have an ugly precedent for this in this country. You're right. There are many other people who will serve pizza to a same-sex couple. But it's the principle at work here, and I think it's much to the credit, again, of these businesses who are coming out and calling out the governors of these states on these actions. And so you've got Mike Pence now in Indiana and Governor Hutchinson in Arkansas who are feeling pressured to make sure that these laws explicitly mirror the 1993 law that Bill Clinton signed at the federal level that would not allow this kind of private discrimination, because the state laws as written were not explicit about that.
Yeah. The revised legislation prohibits providers from using the law as a legal defense for refusing to provide services, goods, facilities, or accommodations. It also bars discrimination based on factors that include race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, gender identity, or U.S. military service. We have some callers, Catherine in Random Lake. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. I feel that the law was put in place basically to discriminate against women wanting to get access to birth control. Any pharmacist can say, I'm not selling you birth control because it's against my religion. I really think the basic idea behind this law is to control women's reproductive life.
Well, Tony first to respond to that. She's talking about what I think in Wisconsin we call the conscience clause.
Mm-hmm. You know, Catherine is probably right at some level. Obviously, there have been so many attempts over the last many years to have these kinds of laws in place that would allow people not to serve that which they're uncomfortable with. But, you know, again, it's about the principles of freedom in our country, and should the law defend someone who's being openly intolerant toward others? I mean, that's really what's at stake in Indiana and Arkansas and many other states. And again, the governors of those states, because of the outcry, are feeling pressured to make sure that the law is made consistent with the federal law, which would not allow that kind of private discrimination.
Owen, do you have anything to add?
Well, Catherine's case is, I'm not sure where that's coming from. And again, this reminds me a lot, just in a completely different law, but you think of things like the concealed carry law that came up where that passed in dozens and dozens of states, and every time it passed, people said, oh, there's going to be blood in the streets, it's going to be the Old West, blah, 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 and it never happened. And here again, we have a law that's been in place for over two decades at the federal level, at multiple states, and then we get all these people saying it's going to prevent women from getting birth control. It's going to keep, you know, gays aren't going to be able to have wedding planners, which I'm pretty sure if you search pretty hard, you're going to find some gay wedding planners out there. So it's a newsflash. But all these predictions of doom and gloom that things are going to happen, and they don't. They don't, because in America we are tolerant and we do have a legal system that is set up to try to balance those rights to make sure that we are a tolerant society while still respecting the religious and individual rights of minorities.
Governor Walker, when asked about this, said a religious freedom law has not been pushed in Wisconsin. He didn't say whether he would sign such a bill. But a spokeswoman for his political action committee says he supports religious freedom rights. You mentioned, Owen, that our Constitution is interpreted to to include this religious freedom, but do you see a specific law like this in Wisconsin, coming to Wisconsin?
No, I don't, because I don't think it's necessary. I mean, we have a unanimous 1996 ruling that says the state may not enact laws that substantially burden a person's religious freedom unless the burden is necessary to achieve a compelling state interest. Almost the identical language that is in these kind of laws. So this is already in place, and frankly, this is stronger than statutory protection because it's constitutional interpretation. So there's no law necessary, and I don't. It's not coming to Wisconsin.
Tony?
Well, let's not forget that I think it was 6 months ago, Scott Walker said he had no intention of coming forward with a right-to-work bill, that it was not needed in Wisconsin, that the private sector unions were his partners in economic development, and then all of a sudden, reality changed almost overnight. So we could see something very similar in Wisconsin as regards these religious, so-called religious freedom acts. And I, you know, obviously the governor is running for president in spite of what he says, and my belief is if he comes to the conclusion that this kind of legislation would help him in the Deep South primaries, if he's a serious contender, then we might see something come forward and him getting behind it if he can define it as a big and bold idea. So I agree with Owen. We've got the 1993 law, which he has said several times has been in place for a while, but it calls into question, why do these states then need an additional state law, right? Why isn't the federal law not good enough? And so I'm hoping that in Wisconsin we accept that, yes, the federal law is enough.
Madison this week became the first city in America to offer anti-discrimination protections to atheists. The city council voted to amend its equal opportunities ordinance to specifically add non-religion as a protected class of people. So, Tony, do you think Madison did the right thing? Is there need for this kind of protection?
Well, there are a large number of Americans who do not claim a religious affiliation. And I think Madison was, of course, responding to what's going on nationally with Religious Freedom Restoration Act and so on. So, yeah, I think it's perfectly appropriate that they did that. If you look at the polls in America of what religions people claim, it seems like every time those polls are taken, the number of people not aligning with any religion seems to increase. So, yeah, I think it's appropriate that they did that, and I would expect that we'll see it happen in many other cities and states.
Mm-hmm. Owen?
I got to say, looking at Madison from my viewpoint in West Bend, I wasn't aware that Madisonians had such a problem discriminating against atheists. But I guess it's a problem, so they had to pass it. I read the story and I say, whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't think it's a problem. It's a stance. It's a political stance by government, by politicians who are trying to make a point. I don't think it does any harm. I don't think it does any good.
Let's back to Governor Walker for a moment. Should he become our next president, Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish says she is ready to take over as Wisconsin governor. She talked about it at the Rotary Club of Madison this week. She says she understands the state constitution and feels confident in the taxpayers' confidence in her. She also, well, anyway, Owen, what do you think of a potential governor, Rebecca Clayfish? Is she ready to take over the job?
Boy, that's thinking a long way out, and there's a lot of things that have to happen before that happens. But I mean, that Rebecca Clayfish is a very intelligent woman, and she's certainly risen. I mean, she's been a great lieutenant governor. I think she's been out there working with businesses and working a lot of areas. And bearing in mind that as lieutenant governor, she has virtually no power to actually do anything. She doesn't have a lot of track record in elected office to really know where she was, but I think she's been vocal in her position. She's certainly been competent in her current position, and should Governor Walker be elected to the White House, we are going to have a woman governor of Wisconsin, and I think we should celebrate that.
Tony, what do you think?
Well, I mean, she has not impressed most people as a policy wonk. If she were to be in that position, I would envision her as being more of kind of like a an active promoter of the state of Wisconsin, which is really what the lieutenant governor's role has become, right? Since the, you know, the powers of it have been very, very minimal. But you know, in all seriousness, this was an issue that I think supporters of Mary Burke tried to bring up during the campaign last year, that if the governor does run for president, if he is successful, is a Rebecca Clayfish really qualified to be the governor of our state? I mean, obviously, constitutionally, she is qualified, but I kind of wish that that issue would have been vetted a little bit more in the campaign, because I'm not really sure if she does have sufficient knowledge of the issues that we're dealing with in the state. The good news about politics in America is that we do have elections for governor every 4 years, and if she were to become governor, she would not be in that position in an extremely long time, and we would have an opportunity to vote again in 2000 and, I guess, 18 it would be.
Speaking of Governor Walker's not yet declared run for the presidency, two nonpartisan groups filed federal complaints against Governor Walker and other potential White House candidates. The Campaign Legal Center and Democracy 21 accused the four of ignoring campaign contribution limits for those either running for president or testing the waters. Owen Robinson, should these potential candidates for president, no, everyone thinks they're going to be running, should they have to officially declare and abide by, you know, fundraising limits?
Well, this is the kind of silliness we get into when we have these Byzantine campaign finance laws where, you know, Walker has to say he's exploring the opportunity, because if he says he's running, then all these new laws apply for how to raise funds, and there's all these additional restrictions and reporting and all that stuff. But, you know, so this is a consequence of the complicated laws we put in place. But in the reality is, we know Walker's running. We know Bush is running. We know Hillary is running. We know Feingold is running. So we know these people are running, and they're doing the exact same thing to get around these laws for as late as they possibly can, because once they are officially running, they have a new regime of, or rather a different regime of reporting and finance requirements they have to abide by. So I don't think that lawsuit's going anywhere.
Joy and Owen, I don't think the laws are, in this case, necessarily that complex. I mean, Scott Walker has literally opened up a field office in Iowa. I mean, if that's not running for president, I don't know what is. The problem has been that the Federal Election Commission, which is supposed to be nonpartisan, is supposed to uphold the rules, does not uphold the rules because of the incredible political pressure that they are under. So we go through these facades every 4 years. I never thought I would say the words Ted Cruz and integrity in the same sentence, but I will say at least Ted Cruz has had the integrity to officially declare for office, which now makes him subject explicitly to the laws. And it's much to his credit that he's been the one to do that at this point. And it's much to their detriment, Walker and Rick Santorum and Jeb Bush, Martin O'Malley on the Democratic side, that they have not done this. It's a sham, and it's unfortunate, but I think really at fault here is the broken regulatory system in Washington, where the FEC is essentially bullied by political special interests and does not uphold the rules.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Tony Palmieri, a communications professor at UW-Oshkosh, Mass media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Owen Robinson is a columnist with the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Coming up after a short break, we will talk about the state budget, including whether Wisconsin's prevailing wage law should be repealed. And we'll welcome your input, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking about the top issues in the news this week with Owen Robinson and Tony Palmieri. Let's talk about prevailing wage. Republican State Representative Rob Hutton of Brookfield held a press conference this week to say he and other Republicans support repealing the state's prevailing wage law. It's just a matter of whether it should be a standalone bill or incorporated into the state budget. However, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss followed that up by saying prevailing wage will not be scrapped, that his focus will be on improving the prevailing wage law. All right, so who's got the better idea here, Owen, Hutton or Voss?
I think Hutton does. I think they should scrap this law. And I think that, you know, prevailing wage is one of those things that's been around a long time. And a lot of folks have always known that it inflated the price for government contracts. So, you know, the taxpayers end up spending more for some projects because of some of these laws. But then I think what was really eye-opening was the study by the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance, where it showed just how much we are overspending on some of those things and how flawed the process is for even calculating what the prevailing wage is. And so where the numbers they come up with is $200 to $300 million a year in overages we're spending on these government contracts that we don't need to be. And that's money that could be put back into the UW system or K-12 or given back to the taxpayers as tax cuts or any other number of things. That is real money that's going into the pockets of people who are lobbying to keep this bill in place. And I think that's really the disappointing thing with Voss is he's saying it won't repeal it, but they may reform it. And really he's parroting the lobbying groups who are supporting keeping this law in place because they are the ones who directly benefit from those overpayments for work. Look, we all want people to get paid a fair wage for the work they're doing, and the market can dictate that. The market dictates what people get paid, and that works well everywhere else in the economy. We don't need to be overpaying for government work.
Tony.
Well, what I saw as surprising was that the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance study was apparently paid for by interest groups that have been opposed to prevailing wage. But, you know, Joy, I would encourage your listeners to this morning go to WPR.org, the public radio website, and here's the headline that they'll see. Wisconsin has seen the largest middle class decline of any state. Now, if we repeal prevailing wages and we see further decline in wages, how is that going to help build the Wisconsin middle class? I don't think it will. Robin Voss, I believe, is correct. Prevailing wage law, like any law, should always be revisited, and any flaws in it should be fixed. But the idea, as Representative Hutton suggests, that we would somehow put this in the budget and repeal it without really any significant independent study, not a study paid for by interest groups, but any independent study of those parts of the state where maybe prevailing wage is not working as opposed to parts of the state where it's working well, it seemed to me would be very irresponsible to repeal it without that kind of study.
Let's go to John in Hudson who has a comment on this. Hi, John.
I absolutely agree with the person that just talked. This is the last stab at the middle class. You know, we got rid of unions. You know, we're going to get rid of prevailing wage. Robin Voss, I'm glad that he understands that the middle class needs to be there and is willing to at least work to fix this rather than to scrap this. I mean, we're all out here suffering because our wages are going down. And, you know, this is the last chance we got.
Yeah, Owen, what about that?
Well, the middle class has certainly been in decline throughout America, and particularly in Wisconsin, which had such a robust middle class for so long, it's naturally going to be affected the most. But what we have to remember that the money going to these contracts comes from somewhere. It comes from the middle class. It comes from people who are out there earning a living, who have to pay higher taxes to pay that extra $200 or $300 million a year for these wages. So it's not as if that money is coming out of thin air and being pumped into the middle class. That money is coming from us to us. So I think if we allow the market to work and allow that money to go back to other areas, so if we do take that extra $300 million and put it into UW or K-12 to pay for teachers or any of the other areas where we have needs for government needs, but also even just back to the middle class taxpayers who are paying those taxes. So I think it's a bit of an overreach to suggest that it would automatically be a further contributor to the decline of the middle class.
Two more University of Wisconsin schools, including UW-Oshkosh, where you are, Tony Palmieri, are offering employees buyouts to deal with the looming cuts in Governor Walker's proposed budget. UW-Green Bay also announced a buyout plan this week. UW-Claire and UW-Superior did so earlier. Tony, have you been offered that buyout, or what do you make of all these UW schools doing this?
Well, I personally don't meet the criteria that would be eligible for it at this point. But you know, what I find unfortunate is that the campuses are offering these buyouts before the budget deliberations are even done. In other words, the buyout proposals to me make sense if, in fact, there's a $300 million cut that is set and fixed in stone. But even numerous Republicans now are coming out and saying that the $300 million figure is too large. And quite frankly, I would be surprised if it does remain at that number. So, you know, my hope would be that the campuses would hold off and wait to see what the actual numbers are before we come through with this. You know, I understand one school of thought that would say that when the campuses do come out with these kinds of proposals, it does, you know, underline just how dire the economic situation is at the campuses. But, you know, having said that, I just think it was too early for them to come out. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't expect many personnel at the campuses to take advantage of these buyouts until we know more about what, in fact, the state budget is going to do.
Yeah, you think that $300 million cut's going to be reduced, Owen?
I think it probably will be reduced, but I do think it's prudent for these schools to look ahead and start planning for some reduction and for seeing how many people would be willing to take that kind of buyout and do that. And as the parent of a student at Tony's school, I'm very happy to see UW-Oshkosh leading the way on this.
Well, Tuesday's Election Day, headlining the ballot is the race for state Supreme Court justice between Justice Ann Walsh Bradley and Rock County Judge James Daly. Very briefly, as we are kind of running out of time here, Owen Robinson, who's the better choice here and why?
I think Daly's a better choice. I think Bradley has been especially recently, been a cancer in that court. And really, a lot of the dysfunction you see in the court and the argument and the backbiting and the fighting, Bradley's always right there in the middle of it. And I think that dysfunction is a problem. That being, you know, Daly is not a perfect candidate. I disagree with him on things like his position on the John Doe proceedings and such. But I think his record and his rise to brigadier general in the military, his decades of service in the court system, I think he's proven himself worthy to be the next Supreme Court justice.
Tony?
No, I think Bradley is clearly the better choice here. And you know, I think her voice, especially at this point in time when there's an active effort by organizations or interest groups like WMC to almost literally buy the court, it's really important to have a voice like Bradley's there to really uphold the law and try to, you know, keep some integrity in it.
There's a story in the news that came up this week that reports that online court records show that Judge Daly's daughter has been a fugitive since 2008. She didn't appear in court on charges of operating while intoxicated. Daly said the issue should not affect the campaign, hopes that people will pray for those who struggle with dependency. Very, very briefly, Tony, do you think Daly's daughter is an issue or not?
No, absolutely not. It won't influence my vote as I go to vote. And I think that's the kind of thing in modern politics. It's unfortunate that that would become an issue at the last moment as we get to Election Day here.
Mm-hmm. Owen?
I completely agree with Tony.
Yeah. Well, it's time now for our Week in Review quiz. Wednesday was April Fool's Day, and a few politicians did their best to pull a fast one, including Governor Scott Walker. He put out a tweet that morning to say a big announcement was coming up in an hour. His big news, of course, had nothing to do with running for president. What was Governor Walker's big announcement on April 1st? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You get a chance to guess on the air, and if you are correct, we will send you a prize. We will get your contact information and send you some sort of Wisconsin Public Radio swag. So what was the big announcement on April Fool's Day from Governor Scott Walker? 1-800-642-1234. We will, we've got it. I guess we have a call. Good. Mike in Madison. I didn't think anyone was going to know this one for some reason. Mike, what was Governor Walker's big announcement for April Fool's Day?
He wanted to wish the Wisconsin Badgers basketball team good luck.
That is correct. Yeah, he tweeted that he is supporting the Badgers against Kentucky in the Final Four tomorrow night. Walker tweeted a picture of himself wearing red and giving a high five to a little kid. The message read, "America needs big, bold leadership, and that's why I'm supporting Coach Ryan and the Badgers on Saturday." So was that a good one, Tony?
That was a good one, and this is one thing I agree with Scott Walker 100%. The Badgers should win this game on Saturday.
Owen, you want to weigh in on that one?
No, I'm agreeing with Tony twice in a row. Absolutely, the Badgers.
Back to April Fool's jokes. Newt Gingrich tweeted his support for President Obama's foreign policy. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan said at a meeting he was running for president, so everybody was getting in on this. Liberal billionaire Tom Steyer's environmental group declared that climate change is a hoax. So, Owen or Tom, did either one of you, or Tony, did either one of you pull a joke on April Fool's Day?
I did not.
I did not either. Unfortunately, I'm not that funny.
Well, I'm going to report that my producers pulled a good one on me, and I might even get it at the end of this hour. I'm wondering if Bill was clever enough. No, he wasn't. He's looking at me like, what? They inserted a Rick Astley song, the one about never going to give you up. When you Rickroll someone, are you aware of
that? You got Rickrolled.
I got Rickrolled. and so I was coming out of a break with music, and there he was. Anyway, both of you are feeling good about the Badgers-Kentucky game tomorrow night?
Oh, I think so.
It's going to be a tough one, but yeah, I think they got a chance.
All right. Well, I hope you're right. And thanks to both of you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Bye. Owen Robinson, columnist with the West Bend Daily News, blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Tony Palmieri, communications professor at UW Oshkosh, and a Medium columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Thanks very much to Bill Martins and to Kayla Blado for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Also, Monday at this time, it is Mondays with Mike. It's the first Monday of the month, which means WPR director Mike Crane will join us to answer your questions and respond to your feedback about Wisconsin Public Radio. Mondays with Mike, every first Monday of the month here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Have a good weekend. This is the Ideas Network.